Plugged in and ready to rumble. It's Monday the 19th of March 2018, flying through it. So got a great podcast tonight, and as usual, podcasts go up on crazfiles.com, C-R-A-Z-Z, and plenty to go through up there. And you can also get them over at iTunes and Facebook. I put them up on Twitter as well, and working on the YouTube account. So plenty to go through on the website. Lots of great articles going up and unique stuff, and original content as well. I put that out there last week with Jim West, like people to write some original articles, and we'll put them up there on the website. So getting that going, and don't forget to check out our other great websites, opensourcetruth.com. Check out Renegade Tribune for a lot of articles going up there, and also Nexus Newsfeed Australia doing great work over there. So plenty to go through. And Professor Brian Martin is plugging in with me again tonight. Great to have you for a chat tonight, Brian.
My pleasure.
I just got my website up here. We did a great podcast with you October 30th, 2016, An Experience with Vaccination Gatekeepers. And also another one, Freedom of Choice, with yourself and Dr. Reamer on February the 7th, 2016. So, been a while since I chatted with you. Both great shows, and always great to speak with you. How have you been doing? Because we're going to talk about your new book, which is very exciting tonight. I love promoting these kinds of books. Really love it and like to help people out and get it out there. How's things been on your end at the university? How's everything going?
Everything is fine there. And since we talked, I've been working on this book a lot of the time. Although it builds on previous work, it's still a fair bit of new material as well.
That's right. And you're a professor of social sciences at the University of Wollongong in Australia. And you oversaw Judy Weilerman's great work thesis there, looking at the vaccination issue and stuff in Australia. And I'll post all the information tonight along with the podcast and your great website, because you've done a lot of great articles about this issue. And I was sort of thinking that a while back. I wonder if you were going to put a book out. It's so good that you have done that. Do you want to, we have a lot of new listeners, especially in the US and around the country, and do you want to just give us a rundown of yourself, and then we'll lead into your book a little bit, how this came about?
Okay, well, back in the 1970s, I started getting involved in scientific controversies. That was nuclear power then, but then I got involved with various other ones, either as a participant, as in nuclear power, or in researching them, such as fluoridation and pesticides. And I particularly looked at the way in which dissident experts, those people who have credentials or other credibility, often come under attack when they're on the side with, you might say, the side against the establishment. So that's the sort of background of it. Investigated a whole bunch of different scientific controversies in some depth, and I've been studying what I call suppression of dissent, namely someone speaks out about an issue and comes under attack because of that. And then just 8 years ago, I was contacted by Meryl Dorey of the Australian Vaccination Network, and she told me about this attack on their organization, the AVN, and I was absolutely astounded because I'd never heard anything like it for a group that is basically presenting information to the public about an issue of a controversial issue, to be sure, but just issuing information and all the amazing methods of attack. And so I've written various articles about this, and now finally a book, Vaccination Panic in Australia.
Great name. It certainly caught my eye. Was it a long process doing the book, or you've been able to sort of slide into that pretty easily because of all the knowledge you have and research you've done as well? Because it's a very complex issue in Australia. I constantly talk with people overseas and in the US. Some of them are going through the same things. Some of them are looking at us and watching this as well. But it's very confusing looking out, looking in. Into Australia, thinking, what's going on here with this whole thing? And it's created so much infighting and division. You've taken a fly on the wall, look at this, kind of in the middle. And was it an easy book to write, or how long did it take you to get this all published and done?
Well, I use a writing program based on work by Robert Boyce and Tara Gray. So it involves doing daily writing. Daily write 300 words. Doesn't sound like a whole lot, but if you do that for a year, then you've got a full-length book. And that's how I wrote this book. I wrote regularly on it. And then once I get the first draft, then there's a lot of work after that. In fact, more work after that than writing the first draft. And it wasn't too hard because I'd written various other things on the same topic. But what was the interesting new part for me was to link it with what's called moral panic theory, which is a social science theory about things called moral panics when people get very excited about something. It might be, you know, in the old days, it could be rock music, or it could be people wearing tattoos, or there's a whole range of different things. People get very worried about the challenge to the moral codes of the day. But it's also seemed relevant to the vaccination issue because of this suddenly this alarm about the critics of vaccination, whereas vaccination rates are just as high as always. There's no seem to be no particular reason why there'd be a concern about the vaccination critics, and it's because of this campaigning group that's been pursuing it ever since 2009.
That's right. Yeah, yeah. I did a great podcast with Alona Lan in Queensland a couple of weeks back, and she's created the Healthy Immunity Communities. And we'll talk about just around when she was on, we had Dr. Mason Stevenson in the Sunshine Coast getting up on TV and going on about unvaccinated children being a threat to the community and adults, you know, and we've been getting all this through the media as well. So I think this scare campaign is exactly what you said. Yeah, it's gone on through history, and this is a very interesting one because I myself looking into this deeply and getting a lot of guests on and putting a lot of articles up. So it's great to have you on because you have such a unique way of looking at this, and it's just sometimes to me I can't believe what I'm seeing in this regard. But I'm just getting into your book now, so I haven't obviously finished that, but I think it's come at a great time that you've done this. So your book is Vaccination Panic in Australia, Brian Martin. Before we just talk about the book a little bit, explain, just let us know, it's available for people from your website for a free download and a donation if they so choose.
That's right.
It's great.
I've got a regular publisher. It's Irene Publishing. They're based in Sweden. But my publisher is very generous. He's not trying to make money out of business. He believes in the cause. And so he lets me put my books free online as well. So that's I'm a great believer in open access and making things available, you know, without the restrictions of money, if possible. And so this is a good opportunity for me. And this time got the PDF. It's got live links, which is hopefully will be useful to readers.
It's great. Yeah, I just got it on for the desktop, and it looks wonderful. So, and great work that you've offered that for folks. And I'll put all the relevant links up as well. And I got the article up here that was from the AVN, and it's saying here you're also the Vice President of Whistleblowers Australia. And I didn't know you've authored 17 books, obviously hundreds of articles, mainly, as you said, on dissent. And these types of things, which I'm very interested in as well, because we're seeing this in Australia, and this attack on our democracy and freedom of speech, unbelievable as well. So in regards to your book, have you had a good response? Because I've already had a great response on Facebook. How do you think it's going to go? Because I think that you've put this out at a really crucial time, as a matter of fact. You've sort of, and I think this is a book, is this something, are you getting any kind of interest from the mainstream media? Is there any folks out there besides me that wants to talk to you about the book?
I don't think so. I'm not even trying for mainstream media because I know too much about the way the media operates in Australia on this issue. And not only do I, you know, sort of have a different viewpoint than normal, but it's one that's the media would hardly ever touch. In fact, one of the chapters I mentioned the mass media and the way they deal with the issue. But I might just mention the three of the big chapters here are about three types of methods used to silence vaccine critics. And I think it's also relevant, some of these same methods are used against a lot of other critics. What's interesting about the Australian case and vaccination is that these things have been used in such a prolonged and intensive way against a single organization. And so the three techniques of silencing, I say, are denigration, which is basically bad-mouthing the vaccine critics. Secondly, harassment. And one of the primary ways there is to make all sorts of complaints to government departments. And thirdly, is censorship. And one of the techniques there is when the vaccine critics try and organize a public talk, then stop the Australian Vaccination Network as they initially were. They will write to the venue and try and get it, the talk stopped. And so not only do I write about these methods of attack, but my special interest is in methods of defense. So if you're a group that's got some, saying something and others are trying to silence you, then you have to say, what's the best way to proceed? And it's not always obvious. Not everyone can do, mount a good defense, but an organization can develop certain ways of doing that. And I think what's interesting about the Australian debate here is that you've got an evolution of tactics. So the SAVIN, the pro-vaccination attacker group, used these various techniques, but they didn't destroy the vaccine critics organization, and they forced it into using new techniques, such as organizing talks, which the venue is not announced until just beforehand. Anyone who's bought a ticket to the talk gets notified by a text a couple hours before the talk starts about where it is. And so in this way, you've got a strange situation is suddenly the critics are having meetings, and this is especially to show the film Vaxxed most recently. And the pro-vaccination people who try to shut these talks down, not only are they not succeeding, but they've forced the critics into a sort of defensive situation where they feel under threat and therefore they're more likely to band together. And so it's actually strengthening the vaccine critics organization and networks. So it's a very interesting, and as a social scientist, as a sociologist, it's absolutely fascinating to see the tug of war, the fight back and forth between these two contending parties.
Yeah, that's right. And just reading a little bit from your book here, you say, I've long been concerned about free speech, in particular the ability to express unpopular ideas without reprisals. For me, the attack on the AVN was an issue of freedom, of free speech, and I decided to become involved on that basis. And you say here, personally, I do not have strong views about vaccination. You've said that to me before. You say you have no children and have never made a decision about anyone else's vaccination before. And so your interest in the vaccination issue is as a social scientist and a defender of free speech.
That's right.
So, that's very important for folks to know, because that's why we need people like you. That's why I'm connecting with you. I feel like it's so important, because you're not on this side or that side. You're a social scientist, and you're coming from that angle, and you're looking in at this, looking into the looking glass here, and you've been studying this for years. So it is an incredible case, and I think you're a great researcher for people to look at. And I do feel, though, there's so much to cover, we would need hours, but you were talking before about this SAVIN group, and I've dealt with them personally, and I know a lot of other people have as well, but I did notice that straight away. I had friends who were organizing the viewings of Vaxxed, and I did see that. I noticed that. It was just incredible for me to be watching that as well, where they were where they were pushed to the point really of almost showing the film in back alleys and having to text people where the address of the film was going to be a few hours before. And of course, I think it was the Castlemaine Theatre in having the film festival in Victoria were going to premiere Vaxxed in Australia. And I know the organisers there said openly that documentaries are a good documentary is designed to get people thinking and talking and arguing and disagreeing or agreeing and getting people thinking. But they were attacked as well, and they did make a public statement about threats to their staff and the public who were going to attend the movie, and they pushed it to a different time, and then they didn't show it at all. And I heard that same thing go on and on. I even heard about, I was on Twitter and I heard, I think it was the Maroochydore, RSL, were saying that they're not going to be intimidated or bullied by these people, and the movie went ahead. And then of course, they toured around Australia and had, great success, because I had a friend who organized, up there, in Newcastle, and, they had standing room only. And a lot of people were showing a lot of interest. So the media's attack on the film only wanted to make people see it more.
I was looking
at that and thinking, my God, yeah. You know, what are you doing? You know, you're just making people want to see the movie more. So that was good for them. But, you know, it was amazing seeing some interviews on TV where they were putting the movie Vaxxed down, but they hadn't even seen it. You know, a lot of the prostitutes, who I call them, you know, and television morning breakfast shows and having a go at anti-vaxxers and the way they do. They hadn't even seen the film. They didn't know anything about it. And, you know, it was an unbelievable kind of case as well, the Vaxxed movie and how much controversy that caused in this country. But, you know, at the end of the day, you know, it was kind of unbelievable for me, because I've been watching this for years, these attacks and threats. And I can't believe it's gone on, because it happened to Dr. Sherry Tenpenny. And I've said this many times on the podcast, the FBI got involved. She told me over there, and she said, you guys don't know half of what happened to her. She was going to come to Australia for a holiday and do some talks. Mm-hmm. She was invited to do some talks about vaccines, being a doctor. And the threats were so serious that the FBI got involved over there. And she said to me personally that they were horrific threats on her, and this has been going on for a long time, and of course you're involved with this, so it's I'm wondering how that's been for you as well over all these years. Is it something that you've seen escalate in Australia, or are you seeing I'm seeing a big uprising of people wanting at least fair information. I'm not seeing, you know, so much this person's anti-vax or whatever, pro-vax. I think a lot of people just want solid information now and want answers. And I think they're sick of the fighting and all of this. Are you seeing this in Australia? Or does it seem to be getting uglier for you? Or how's it look?
What I might first comment is to take up your point about the attacks on the Vaxxed film actually made it more popular. And that's something that Sue Curry Jansen, who's a U.S. Censorship researcher, and I call censorship backfire. And we've documented it lots of cases, so that if the right response, if you're censored, you can actually trigger more interest in your material. So it's not guaranteed, but that's part of what I wrote about in the book, is how to turn these attacks into positives. And in my own case, when I first was writing about this in 2010 and 11, I came under serious attacks, and there were, you know, sort of various things online, abusive comments and complaints to my university and so forth. Didn't bother me really, because I knew nothing would come of it. And then after about 3 or 4 years, when I was every new thing I wrote in the area, there'd be critical comments, then they stopped attacking. and they stopped attacking me. It's aside from Judy Wileyman case. But in terms of things that I wrote myself, yeah, they left me alone primarily. And I'd say, what's the reason for that? And my guess is they don't want people reading what I've written. In other words, they might have clued up enough to realize that some of their activities are counterproductive.
That's right. Yeah, that's right. I think you just need to, keep doing what you do. That's what we've all done. And I've always said, I think these groups just try and scare people off.
Well, they do scare a lot of people. They do scare people.
I've had people contact me, Brian, and they're scared of it a bit, and it almost to the point where they just won't go on and post or talk about anything anymore. And
especially serious for professionals. This is be doctors, nurses, midwives, chiropractors, anyone who is critical of vaccination in the public or even in a private space that can be tapped into, then that material is posted online, all sorts of abusive comments, and then complaints are made to the regulatory agency. And so people in that situation are quite right to be frightened about having their career jeopardized as a result of simply expressing their viewpoint on an issue which there should be different viewpoints allowed. Now, what's amazing to me about this is seeing it in comparison to other controversies. And that's where my background of decades of studying everything nuclear power, pesticides, nuclear winter, origin of AIDS, a whole bunch of different controversies, is in those cases, yes, there's sometimes attacks upon experts who are critical of orthodoxy, and I've documented plenty of those, but just the ordinary citizen who is, for example, opposed to fluoridation, nothing's done to them and there's no attempt to censor them. So we don't see a campaign to stop anyone criticizing climate change standard viewpoint or criticizing, pesticides, fluoridation. It's almost absurd to imagine. But in vaccination, it's because of the campaigning and we got this special situation, which free speech has just gone by the board. It's quite remarkable.
That's right. I think the UN, the UN just released a paper there about being astonished at Turnbull government's anti-democratic slide in Australia, and they're mentioning human rights abuses here. That was an incredible paper from the United Nations. It's a remarkable thing that's going on here, but I have seen a tightening as well with the government. I'm watching Greg Hunt there about a week ago or so. He was talking about confronting Facebook groups, I guess. I guess the admins or people who run these big Facebook groups, Brian, they're huge. I mean, there's thousands of people in there now, the anti-vaccination Facebook groups, wanting them to curb or censor people posting anti-vaccination propaganda as he sees it. And yeah. I thought that was pretty amazing. A lot of people are saying they're being censored. I mean, I have been myself just recently, some of my comments and things I put up are being marked as spam on Facebook. I think that from what I've seen in the last few years, it's kind of got out of control. Some of these pro-health, freedom of choice groups and anti-vaccination groups have blown out in numbers to such a large amount of people. And yes, you do get the trolls on there and all this and whatnot. But in general, from what I've looked at, it's a lot of mums and dads, a lot of pretty intelligent and great people on there posting a lot of information that's coming mostly from the US in regards to, say, if we looked at vaccine dangers and this, or vaccine adverse reactions and side effects and things, a lot of people want a more open discussion in Australia about this. They want that side to be heard. And, you know, I'm always saying how it's not, and I don't think this is a fair go in this country. I think it's been terrible, and I think the media fear campaign and the discrimination campaign, it's really hate speech to me that's been hammered over people's heads. They're now saying in some of these articles that unvaccinated families are filthy and dirty and all this stuff, and I just, there's these people commenting on there like, people who are not vaccinated need to be put out in the desert in camps, and you know, they need their children taken from them. But this isn't science. It's not offering anything for people on the fence or mums and dads out there to look at. It's just nasty name calling. It's vindictive in its nature, and it's still going on today. And of course, you get all these Savin trolls in there causing trouble and trying to break up the groups and everything. But I find it remarkable that they're still getting away with this, and the newspapers here, I'm still seeing it on the programs and the breakfast shows and the chat shows. They're still going after anti-vaxxers and they've turned that anti-vaxxer into a slur and a nasty thing, you know. And but I'm still not seeing any debate, and I'm not seeing any fair debate or people being taken onto these shows and letting them have a say. I'm not seeing any of that. I'm just seeing attacks on families, and this brutal attacks. And I've talked about it many times, and I know people say you shouldn't watch that, you don't care, but I get that information on Facebook, people post it, because I don't watch those shows, Brian. They give me a headache, but they do it in the morning breakfast shows and these things, and I've actually put up many where they call it a vaccine debate, and there's like three or four people just attacking people who don't want to vaccinate, and they're not offering any science or any hard evidence to back up their pro-vaccination stance. It's just name-calling, and I find this absolutely incredible that there hasn't been a national debate or more open discussion here. It's just not happening, and it's got to the point where they're cancelling international speakers, their visas, from entering Australia. Right. And we know what happened to the vaxxed film people too. Polly Tommy, right. They had their passports confiscated at the airport, and we just had Kurt Huckenlively banned from coming into Australia. It's amazing.
And one of the things that's very strange about this is that if you actually look at the figures, the number of children who die of infectious diseases in Australia is, you know, each one is a significant death to, you know, for that family, but in statistical terms, it's not that many compared to a lot of other causes of death, whether you want to go domestic violence or drowning in bathtubs or whatever. And especially then if you compare it to other things, which you might also be opposed to if you said, let's look at alcohol. Drinking alcohol leads to more violence, and it leads to more deaths. It leads to traffic accidents, and innocent people are killed because someone else was drinking. Domestic violence is greatly influenced by alcohol. But there's no one out there saying, we should stop anyone saying anything in favor of alcohol in public because of all these deaths. No, that's it's a powerful industry. So it's, in my view, it's a bit of a sidetrack. They've got all these serious things, including medical error, which is a major cause of death, things that cause a lot more deaths, which are simply ignored, and there's this incredible attention to vaccine critics. It's bizarre to me, but it's explainable in terms of, you might say, a path of least resistance. If you're going to attack something, attack the weak groups, the groups that don't have a lot of money behind them, a lot of government support and so forth, much safer to attack them than to attack a powerful industry that's causing death.
That's the worry, isn't it? That's the scary thing. And, you know, I followed the whole No Jab, No Play campaign since about 2013, and the media attack. Of course, the News Corp media, the Telegraph paper, they came out with this No Jab thing. And I've talked about it many times, how bizarre that is. That a newspaper was doing this in this country, and nobody thought that was absolutely so strange, you know, that you're getting a News Corp newspaper, you know, very much controlled by Rupert Murdoch, and we all know about him. But for a newspaper to do what they did and then come out with articles accusing parents of being baby killers and terrorists, I constantly put this up because I hope that nobody forgets what these newspapers have done and how they've this witch hunt and how families who have done nothing wrong have been treated, you know, like their kids are lepers and they've been treated like terrorists, and it's a terrible thing, you know. And these papers, it's just a non-stop News Corp newspapers, you know, I hold personally responsible, and of course it goes deeper. How deep? Well, one day hopefully we'll find out. It seems to be all about pushing a mandatory kind of vaccination agenda in Australia, so we would have to tie that to big pharmaceutical interests, and there's a lot of money in on it. But I've never heard one. I have personally had a look into a lot of people who are writing for these newspapers and pushing certain vaccinations or whatever, and they all seem to be tied up with the pharmaceutical industry in some way, and it's kind of unbelievable to see, but not. I just haven't found any that have even been fair to this day at all.
There's another side to this, which is I'm not even sure that this whole campaign is actually in the interest of the pharmaceutical companies, because it's polarizing the issue and triggering a lot of more opposition than it might otherwise. And that's the strange thing, is some of these, like No Jab, No Play, No Jab, No Pay, is brought in despite the opposition to people in mainstream medicine. And there's a whole group of people in mainstream medicine and who support vaccination, but they support a respectful approach to parents who have reservations. And that's the sort of approach that I'd say, yes, that's fair enough. Promote vaccination in a respectful way. Let people make up their own minds. And there's a lot of people in the mainstream, in the medical profession, who would support that. But we've got this panic going on, initially promoted by Savin, the citizen campaigners. But then they got the Murdoch media on board. And then they got the government. The government more follows the media than they do follow expert advice from the medical profession. So it's a really a weird situation where the policy might actually end up being counterproductive for people's health, being driven by a group that's simply demonizing anyone who speaks out critical.
That's right.
Vaccination.
Have you been able to track more into this No Jab campaign? Because it kind of started from the newspapers, and I've always said, if you were outside the country looking in, you'd be thinking, you know, why is a an Australian newspaper pushing so hard this to change the laws in Australia when nothing was wrong? I mean, it was an amazing thing, but I kind of followed it from them. But I've been checking in with people if they've done any research on the origins of it, what was going on, maybe.
I think the way
the doors there.
The way I approach this is not so much to try and build a case, because for that I need to do a lot of interviews and behind the scenes work. But I, in one of the chapters, I summarize some of the arguments by other social scientists who have looked into this, and several of them are especially useful. So there's Mark Largent, who wrote a book called Vaccine, and he's looking at the U.S. situation and seeing the lack of actually a democratic approach to vaccination. And that's because people start having reservations, and rather than the authorities saying, well, we need to try and present our own case more effectively, some of them do that, but then they start to say, well, we need to mandate it because it's so important. And then Stuart Bloom, who's wrote a very good book just published last year, titled Immunization, then and subtitle How Vaccines Became Controversial, he's looking at the same sort of thing. And both Largent and Bloom are supporters of vaccination, but they've looked at the history and the dynamics of the debate and so forth, they realized that the vaccination started off as an altruistic thing. People weren't claiming patents. They're sharing information and genuinely concerned about children's health, especially. But then when the companies got involved in a big way, then the dynamic changed, and suddenly we've got development of dozens of new vaccines that are in the wings. And so people start becoming a bit more suspicious as a result. It's not the old days when it was, you know, vaccination for rampant diseases. It's a plausible argument. I know there's arguments on both sides, but now it's vaccines for fairly rare diseases. Vaccinate a million people to prevent one death and don't bother seeing whether there's adverse reactions. So it's a bit of a dilemma. And a lot of the parents who have become well informed about this are not necessarily against vaccination. They're concerned about too many vaccines, too many at the same time, and various other things. So it's all very complicated at the end of, you know, in terms of what parents have to decide. And I feel for them because it's not an easy decision to make given the complexities of the issues and the difference between the different vaccines and the different illnesses. So one of the things I comment on is that we shouldn't even be talking about the vaccination debate. We should have a separate debate about every single vaccine. But it's very convenient to group them all into one. Oh, just vaccination. But it's very misleading because, you know, some diseases are highly contagious and more likely to be dangerous, measles and whooping cough examples, but others, they're pretty mild and, you know, why are we bothering? You know, mumps decades ago thought to be a bit of a humorous thing. All the kids got it. And but then it's turned into a fearsome thing and grouped along with measles and rubella. So there we go.
Well, fear sells very much. But you bring up a good point there. I mean, I'm looking now at a CDC government document someone put up, and it's saying here 1960, it was a total of 8 vaccines, and in 2016 it's 70-plus shots, and there's been no proper research done into that many vaccines being given to children in a space of 4 years. And many people are crying out for proper research to be done here. And you can see the pushing parents, with the no jab thing into vaccinating the kids, or they can't get government benefits and they can't put their kids in childcare and all this. And they're pushing them to do all this catch up, and they're jabbing these kids with so many vaccines in one go, and for me, researching both sides and looking at adverse reactions and problems associated with vaccines, I pulled up an article about Australian children having the highest food allergies in the world, how Australian schools are struggling with the autism cases. From the Australian newspaper, they said there's been a 42% increase in autism diagnosis in 3 years in this country. But they're saying, don't worry about it, it's not a cause for concern. And clearly, I've noticed just personally, kids who aren't healthy and aren't well, and I think it's, you know, to be giving that many shots and not giving parents, and people the right amount of information and making this open, they're just telling you to go and do it. And I think it's the most terrible thing that could happen, this, because, from what I've heard, a lot of people rushed and vaccinated based on the fact that they didn't want to lose benefits and didn't want to be pushed out, wanted to keep their kids in childcare or whatever, and they've gone and done it, and that's a terrible situation for us to be in, because I'm personally done my research over many, many years and spoken to great people like you and many doctors on this podcast and read many books. And my personal opinion on it is that I don't want to vaccinate, and I didn't do it to our young one. And And she's perfectly healthy, Brian. She's not a zombie, you know, in perfect health, and a couple of colds. That's really it. And I've decided to go my own way on that, and I chose homeopathy, homeoprophylaxis for her, just to use that. But other people choose other things, and you know, that's their right. But as recently we've had with the Skeptics Society, along with the Savin people, and all of this, there's been another big attack on natural therapies and people being able to practice natural therapies, Chinese herbal medicine and homeopaths, naturopaths, even vitamins and supplements, people's right to go and choose them. And I never thought I'd see this in this country, Brian, where you're reading the newspapers and they're attacking, you know, vitamin D and vitamin C, and attacking people for choosing to go that way. And that's the thing that I've really decided to take up on this. I'm not telling people not to vaccinate or to vaccinate. And that's why I like your work. I just want an open, I want this to be more open, and I want there to be more transparency, and I don't want Australia to go down this path. And I think it's unfair and it's discriminatory, and people aren't getting a fair go, and they're being pushed into this vaccine, into vaccinating their children now. And I can clearly see that, and it's a worry to see in this country, especially with people like the health ministers and Jill Hennessy and these people. They just seem possessed. And I'm watching politicians like Greg Hunt and these people up on TV, and they look like slick pharmaceutical sales reps, not politicians to me, you know, and it just looks wrong. And they're not talking, as Alona Lahn said. She's had breakfast with Greg Hunt and these people, and they're not talking to anybody from the anti-vaccination side, and they're not talking to parents with vaccine-injured children. There's no debate, there's no discussion. They're just, we've written them many letters and tried to get them to debate or come on to talk with one of the doctors, like Dr. Reimer or whatever. They never do it, and they're not interested to, and they just keep pushing that line of, you're just going to be vaccinated. My dad wrote a letter to Minister Hennessy's office in Victoria. He said, look, I'm a father of four boys, I'm concerned. And they just sent him this pro-vaccination government website. And it basically tells you vaccines are good and you'll do it. It's like, I just can't believe it. You know?
Yes. I'll just comment on one of the changes over the past quite a few decades. And that's, it used to be that the doctors were the authorities, along with other authorities, whether it's, you know, police or government officials and so forth. And most people complied. But there's been a move, and it's been gradual but relentless, for you might say consumers or citizens to demand more of a voice and to become better informed, and not just to take things on the basis of what the authorities say. And so this is a tendency. A lot of patients, for example, go and they learn about their condition themselves. They look up, read information, become informed, and doctors, by and large, they either have to accept it or they're going to put up a rear guard resistance. But so there's an empowerment of citizens and consumers and patients. But in vaccination, it seems like the establishment is just ignoring this whole process. It doesn't really have a strategy to deal with the fact that a lot more parents are becoming informed and questioning orthodoxy. And so they're just imposing more draconian controls or pressures, and it's something is going to break at some point, because we got the tension between greater empowerment and a greater use of authority to promote vaccination. It seems to me something will have to break along the line somewhere.
That's right. Yeah, vicious attacks from the media about that. And I always say, why aren't Australian citizens, why aren't I allowed as an Australian citizen to do my own research? I mean, and it doesn't make sense, some of the things that they're saying. They always say that you're going onto Dr. Google and all of this, but it's the public's right, Brian, to be informed. And I've always said that, you know, if parents can have a six-month-old and they're not sure about vaccinating, it's their right to go and ask a doctor, and also to go and see a homeopath, or go on the internet and ask some people, or find out some new information and make an informed decision. as to what they think's best for them, for their family or their child, you know. I've met mums and dads very much so, Brian, that aren't anti-vax or pro-vaccination. They're not into any of that. They're not on Facebook. They're just worried, as dads and mums, that vaccine's going to hurt their children, and their kids are healthy. There's nothing wrong with them. They're completely healthy kids. And so, you know, this whole thing from the media about these kids being dangerous is what's a worry to me now. And I've followed this a lot. And I put up a very popular article that's gone all over the world about the Harvard immunologist. And she told legislators in the US that unvaccinated children pose zero risk to anyone. Dr. Tetiana, I think it's a book, Heinich, if I pronounce that right, sorry to the doctor, but she seems to be, a lot of people said she's a great lady, and she's a PhD in immunology, Brian, and I'm sure you've read this, and she's talking about the misconceptions about vaccines, and she wants to help formulate a fair and balanced understanding, and is accepted vaccine theory and new scientific findings about unvaccinated children posing. Do unvaccinated children pose a higher threat to the public, to our communities, than the vaccinated? Which, to me, is silly. I mean, there's this whole hysteria about unimmunized kids being a threat to vaccinated kids. That in itself doesn't make sense. But this is a pretty amazing lady, and she's done an amazing paper there and introduced this in America to lawmakers. And she goes through each vaccine and she explains everything. I put it up on the website. It's been very popular. But this was completely ignored by our media in Australia. Completely, totally ignored. Then you pick up the paper and they're pushing the vaccine issue and saying that unvaccinated kids are like a bomb that's going to go off, and they're a threat to the public spaces, and they're a threat to everybody around them. But they don't. You read the article, and you're like, "Well, where's the proof? Where's something that I can check?" And then you get a Harvard immunologist saying that this isn't the case, and going through it step by step, they ignore it, completely ignore it.
We can't just blame the media alone, because any journalist in Australia who puts out an article, a story that is sympathetic to the vaccine critics is likely to come under sustained attack with all sorts of complaints to their proprietor. So it's part of the silencing is to silence media coverage that is open to, if not sympathetic to, vaccine critics. I might just mention one thing that you sort of hinted at, and that is, one of the things I, towards the end of the book, is I conclude that the whole vaccination debate, and has become highly polarized and highly emotional and so forth, has become a distraction from other ways of improving children's health. And you've got all sorts of things, such as better diet, you know, and just raising the standard of living, getting people out of poverty, and you know, there's hygiene, there's even just getting more sleep. It improves your immunity. It's going to reduce disease rates, and not just on infectious disease, probably other diseases as well. But these get a fraction of the attention of the vaccination approach, and that seems to be very unfortunate, and I'm not sure what the solution is, but anyway, I've raised this as a problem in the book to say, why is this... Everyone's so preoccupied with vaccination when we've got alternatives, and the two sides could actually agree that better nutrition is good for kids and it's going to improve their health. But nope, they're going to, you know, duke it out on the vaccination issue, when the other issues are simply forgotten.
That's right. That's what I live by, and that's what we spoke to Alona Lahn about, the natural immunity community. She is going with that, and that's what I've done myself as a dad. It's all about the immune system. It's about a healthy living environment, better standards, clean water, fresh food, fresh vegetables, lots of antioxidants, lots of goodies, you know, live enzymes, kids playing, going in the sunshine, being kids, getting dirty, getting in the mud. building their immune system as we raise our standard of living and become healthier that way. And that's what you're saying. Yeah, it's so true. But that's just not looked at. And that's such a sad thing that I hope to see change, because you would think making our children healthy would be the number one issue, but they've turned that all around and they've twisted everything, and they're making it so, well, it's only vaccines that can make your kids healthy. If you don't vaccinate, then your kid's not going to be healthy, because that's it. And they're making it, they're going to the point now where it's just, everything else is off the table. It's just all about vaccines. It's like we've got to eat these things for breakfast, lunch and dinner, and it's just insane that this isn't being talked about, how we raise healthier, better adjusted children, not just, you know, physically, but, you know, mentally and spiritually as well, in our communities in Australia, as well as our Indigenous populations as well, getting access to clean water and fruit and vegetables, the Aboriginal people, you know. We hear about this, you know, there was a documentary the other night, Brian, that I hadn't seen, about sugar, that they're just dosing everything with this processed white sugar and the effects it's having on our population, our kids, you know. All this poisons and pesticides, as you like to study as well. It's amazing, and there's so many things that we should be talking about, but it seems the entire conversation is now centering around vaccines, and it just seems to be crazy to me that nothing else is on the table and being discussed when our children's futures and lives are at stake here. It's such an important issue. And they're demonizing people just because they don't want to vaccinate. But everyone I've spoken to want a fair go, that's all. And they want to be heard, and they want all of this that we're talking about as well. But it's not going on the table. It's just this punch over the top of the head vaccines thing. And I think people are getting really tired of it, in my opinion, you know. Really? Because it's not getting us anywhere, you know. And so I hope that we can see some change in this country, because I think, Brian, I think it's coming to the point where, you know, the media and the government and the health ministers, whoever it may be, that are pushing this mantra, you know, I think there has to come a time where they're going to have to face up to these parents and people in this health freedom movement and anti-vaccination communities that want dialogue and they want discussion. They're going to have to face up to them at some point and have a discussion here, because I can't see this continuing. It's just getting worse and worse, and I don't know, looking at it, where it's going to go, because it's not going to benefit anyone.
There's one prediction I'll make, which is the debate will keep going. I know this is not what people on either side like to hear, but I wrote this when I did a book published in 1991 about the fluoridation controversy, and I made the prediction then that the debate would keep going, and it's here we are over 25 years later, and the debate is still pretty much the same sort of thing.
The fluoride's still in the water.
There's all sorts of new evidence and so forth, but the main arguments are still the same as they were then. So it's a bit daunting to imagine that the vaccination debate will be, you know, kicking along in another 25 years. And so in some ways, my message would be to both sides on this, including to the critics of vaccination, which is to think about the methods that you use. And I'm very much I'm critical throughout the book of the methods used of denigration, harassment, and censorship used by the pro-vaccination campaigners and Savin and others. But I would also be critical of vaccine critics who use the same sort of abuse and complaints and so forth about proponents of vaccination, because I think it's counterproductive, and it's certainly not the way we want to try and create doesn't bring about the sort of society we want, which is to have respectful engagement with the issues to try and reach some sort of a solution that everyone's going to be willing to go along with, if not too excited about. That's wishful thinking, perhaps, but anyway, that's my feeling. Right. Think about the methods that you're using to promote whatever side, whatever viewpoint you want. Think about the methods, which means Do you try and censor the other side? Do you give them abuse? Do you make complaints to try and use the, you know, power of authorities to shut them down? Well, it's just not a good, it's not a good way to go about it, in my view. It's making things worse.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, it's an amazing thing. I guess probably my biggest problem at the moment is, you know, with the media continuously saying that unvaccinated kids are a threat to the community. I think this is a dangerous thing. And I think it's pretty terrible, actually, to for them to be allowed to say this. And I think it needs to be stopped and seriously stopped here, because you're segregating people and communities are being torn apart. And we've heard this many times. Families are being torn apart by this. And it's making people who are, some of the biggest anti-vaccination areas, Brian, in Sydney, are the wealthiest areas. And that's what the government are now saying. They want to target these areas with this. They want to bombard them with their pro-vaccination agenda. But I think these people have already looked at that, and I think they've looked at both sides, and they've decided, you know, they don't need the money from the government, and they're wealthy, and I think they've decided what to do with their families and their kids, and nothing's wrong with them. They're healthy. But that's a kind of a dangerous angle for me, something that I dislike very much, when they're getting up there on television and papers and saying people are a threat and their children are a threat, because I can't imagine how that makes families feel, and their kids are being bullied at school, and all of this. And, I hope we see some change there. We've got a few minutes left, but were you able to have a look at, as well, with the Australian doctors, with the informed consent, conscientious objective forms that these doctors were stripped of their license? I know the doctor in Victoria was, and actually had his office raided with, confidential, his patient's records taken by the police, and run out of business because he believes in informed consent with the families that he was treating. What do you think about this, with that sort of issue, with the doctors in Australia being scared to speak up or come out, even scientists and things who want a fair go like you do, and say people like you are, you're talking with me and doing so much great work, but there might be many more in your field, or, you know, who are, as I said, are doctors and scientists who don't agree with what's happening in Australia and want to have their say, but they're scared to talk.
Yes, I agree. It's one of the features of what I call suppression of dissent, namely some scientist or doctor or dentist or anyone else comes under attack, well, that they may or may not succumb and try and go quiet. But the important thing about the attacks is they send a message to all the others as to what might happen if they speak out. And that's what we've got at the moment, is you've got a lot of people who disagree with the pro-vaccination censorship campaign, but they're afraid to speak out because they realize that they'd come under attack themselves. And so you've got a lot of people who are cowed, and they may or may not agree with the viewpoints being espoused, you know, on one or the other side, but they're just afraid to get involved because they have like a quieter life. They just want to get on with their work rather than ending up in a, you know, something that might affect their career, or certainly going to be very disturbing for them personally. So that's what I see. It's something, it's really dispiriting when you see how many people are afraid to get involved in an issue because someone's out there shouting down anyone who questions a certain viewpoint. It's really shocking.
Is this mostly the Seven group?
And, yes, it's the Seven are the ones who are getting away with it because they've got the power of the government and the companies behind them.
They seem to be connected to the media as well.
Some of the media
directly connected with some of the columnists who are writing articles, supplying them with dirt on people and things like that.
Yes, so they're able to do that because they've got the establishment on their side, and they can get away with attacking those on the weaker side. But as I say, one point in the book, there's I don't have any great belief that there's a certain group that is, you might say, more supportive of free speech than others, because I think I'd be just as worried if vaccine critics suddenly were dominating everything, and that and some of them would try and shut up anyone who was in favor of vaccination. It sounds so far away, it's hard to imagine. But nonetheless, the point is we should be having an open debate, and people on both sides being willing to discuss the things in a rational and respectful way. And that should be the ideal.
Are you seeing that? Your personal opinion, are you seeing that in Australia? A fair debate?
Not at all. In fact, the vaccine critics have a very hard time finding anyone who's willing to debate with them. So it's, but that's a very common thing, which is one side is dominant, then they don't want to give the other side even the opportunity to have a public discussion because it might give them more credibility.
Yeah. It's funny, we've actually had people looking into this on Facebook who claim that some of these people bullying and, you know, trolling on the social media groups seem to be in call centres, even from places like India, employed by pharmaceutical interests. It's nothing that I've been able to prove, but it does seem that some nights I've been on there with them and they've changed shifts on me. And some of them, they lie about who they are. They create multiple Facebook personalities. And I'm talking about the Savin people as well. They create many personalities. They never show who they are. They never admit who they are. They seem to be able to, you know, threaten, you know, cinemas, and as we said at the start of the podcast, and do all this stuff, but they also seem to have so much power within the media and government and even social media. It's quite amazing that they can silence anyone talking and all of this. It's amazing, but we don't know sort of who they really are at all. We know who you are and I am and Judy Weilerman, and we know who Meryl Dorey is, and a lot of the people who run the big vaccination, anti-vaccination pages, they're quite public, but we never see these people behind the mask.
Well, it's another issue. It's something that's peculiar, again, about this debate. Normally the attacks on critics of orthodoxy, whether this is on pesticides or nuclear power or race and IQ or something, you've got it's often the employers who lead the attack, you know, even inside universities sometimes. But so what's unusual about this is the attack on vaccine critics is not coming from the medical profession. It's not coming from the pharmaceutical industry, at least not openly. Mm-hmm. It's coming from self-appointed citizen campaigners who are they're poisoning the public waters in terms of debate, and seem to have no accountability. And who can hold them account? It's only the pro-vaccination mainstream. That's my conclusion. Only the pro-vaccination mainstream is going to stop this sort of frenzied attack on critics. But we'll wait and see. I could be wrong about that.
Anyone would have to ask, who they really are. Who they really are and who they're really involved with, in that regard, anyway. That's a deeper issue, I guess. You know, anyone would have to say, well, who are these people? I mean, are they involved with the government or something like this in some way? I mean, seems like a lot of them have a lot of pull. It's a strange thing, as you said. Yeah, are we seeing this in other countries that you notice, or you've just been focused on Australia with your book, obviously? But I know things are happening in California and that, but it seems to be Australia that has this very strong group that you're mentioning there.
Yes, I think that's why I called it vaccination panic in Australia, because there's nothing like it in any other country. And there's nothing like it in any other debate. And I've got a whole section in the book about what drives Savin. In other words, what's the motivation behind this fanatical attack on vaccine critics? I don't come to any conclusions, but I offer a whole series of possible factors that could be influencing it. And without claiming to know the answer, I'm really posing here some possible things that someone else might investigate. But it'll take someone else besides me to do that.
Still very important book. Very, very, very critically important what you're doing, because you, as I said, you're coming straight through the center here. And I think we needed a book like this, Brian, so we'll really try and get that out to folks and push it around and around the world in other countries. I know a lot of people love their reading, so I'm getting through your book, as I said, now and over the next few days, but I like how you've written it as well. You've laid it out nicely, and it's not, you know, it's I found myself just turning the pages, so it's good that you've done that. You've made it accessible for everybody, I think, and I think important people are parents who are having kids, might be 6 months, or they're pregnant and thinking about having kids or whatever it may be. I think it's very important them to hear all sides, and I think your book is so good for the average parents or fence sitters out there who are not sure, and you know, they might be a bit worried about the fighting going on and the anti and pro-vaxxer thing, and they're not sure about the information the doctor's given them, and I think they want some deeper, they've got some deeper questions, and I think your book sort of fills that void for people who are along in their research as well, like I am. It's an important book, and I think it fills that gap in Australia, because a lot of people will be thinking, what's going on here? It is unique, but they can't put their finger on as to who these groups are and why this is happening, and I think that you're offering that so extremely important. And I put up Judy Weilerman's information as well, and I just want to plug that before we go. Her PhD thesis is titled A Critical Analysis of the Australian Government's Rationale for its Vaccination Policy, and it provides academic arguments that show the government's schedule of 16 vaccines is the most likely cause of the illnesses and many deaths that are being observed in today's children. And so, to date, the arguments I have provided, Judy says, have not been refuted with hard evidence. And this is why the University of Wollongong, where you are, Brian, is standing by her research. And so I've put that article up on crasfiles.com. That was very popular, and she seems like a fantastic lady, and she's written an amazing document here that I know has so much respect from other researchers and doctors around the world. So a great thing that you guys have done there. It's really great to see a university stand tall there, you know, and I don't want to see universities crumble, Brian. I'm sure you don't as well, and that's why you're doing this, to this kind of bullying and intimidation, where someone isn't able to put out a thesis like this. That would be so. It's very good to see this in Australia, that the university has stood by you and her and all of this. And now you've got this book out. So we'll plug out for tonight's show and just mention the book and your website. But it'll all go out with the podcast anyway. Brian Martin, Vaccination Panic in Australia. So you're a professor at University of Wollongong, Australia, and vice president of Whistleblowers Australia. You've authored 17 books and hundreds of articles on dissent, scientific controversies, non-violence, democracy, education, and other topics. All that's up on CRAS Files. Mention your website, Brian, where all our listeners can go and download a copy of your book and make a donation to you to help you keep going as well, if they want to.
Thank you very much, Adam.
There it is. I've got it all for you there, Brian. Any way people can contact you at all? You want me to just put your email up with the podcast tonight? Is there any personal email where interested readers can find out more of your books, if they're from overseas
just,
or whatever?
Just put my website.
Okay.
Yeah, because that's got my phone numbers, got my email address. That's the bmartin.cc.
There it is. Yep, www.bmartin.cc. Yep, that's it. Yep. So I'll put that up. Brian Martin, that's got all your publications and everything on there. And there's your email address. So I'll whack that up. And look, man, it's great to talk with you. You're really seem like a great man, and I really commend you for your bravery and what you've done. I know it can't be easy to put out a book like this, but it's a really magnificent achievement, and I think you should be proud. And I'm very excited to help you and promote this, and I'll continue over the weeks to get it out and push it around as much as I can. And hopefully we can log in again and continue and later on and as this all unfolds. And I'm hoping things get better for all of us here and we get a fairer outcome here. So we can only hope for that. See how 2018 goes, and we'll connect again soon for another podcast. But stay well and healthy, and congratulations on your book. It's a great achievement.
Okay. Well, thanks again, Adam.
Thanks, buddy.
All the best to you as well.
All right. Take care.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Good night.
Yep.
All right. There goes Professor Brian Martin. What a brave guy, eh? We really need more of these people to stand up and be counted, you know? And he's offering this magnificent book for free. Really cool. So I'll put all that up with the podcast. Vaccination Panic in Australia, Brian Martin. Good on you, Brian. What a great guy. And, you know, I really love people like that. Work for a university and stand up to bullies and thugs and come out and stand their ground and put out a great book like this. We really need it in Australia. So great work, Brian. And we'll be back with some more podcasts this week, actually. Thanks to all the listeners out there. Hope you enjoy the podcast. Stay safe. Stay sane. Pressfiles.com. Good night.